The Bloodstream podcast is made possible by Takeda and is intended for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. Please consult with professionals before making any healthcare decisions.
We went out on that date to that cocktail party, and then after that, she treated me really, really warm, like she was a really caring person. And, of course, she was talking to everybody, and everybody wanted to talk to her. And then when we left, she also had her secretary and her husband go with us to this, because she wouldn't go by herself with me, because she knew how guys were. And so Tom and Shelley went with us, and afterwards we stopped and had dinner at the Waffle House in Noblesville. And she bought my dinner. I thought, a woman has never bought me a meal before in my life. So I could get used to this. I went back to her house, and I had my truck there. And I said, would you like to see a movie in a week or so? And she goes, yeah. Okay, so I called her, and so that weekend we went and seen Fried Green Tomatoes. Do you remember that movie? And then the next weekend we went and seen another movie. And then seems like we were together every weekend after that.
Hello and welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast, the number one community podcast serving the bleeding disorders community. I am host Patrick James Lynch alongside my co-host Amy Board. Hi, Amy.
Hello, everyone.
And hopefully my audio quality this week is back to normal, though I have not left Ohio. Still here with all the beer.
I was about to say, still in Ohio, better audio. We did some FedEx shipping.
Yes, we did. I have
of certain equipment and things.
Equipment, medicine.
We got you. We got an email late at night, and we made things happen the following morning because that's how we roll.
I will say it was pretty impressive when less than 24 hours from an email being sent out, there was a box on the front door here at South Euclid, Ohio, with a Believe Limited sticker on it. And I was
I'll be honest. Like, of course, those are the boxes that we had lying around from our Believe Box extravaganza. But the fact that they had the sticker on it made me laugh. I was like, this is appropriate. This feels good. Feels correct.
I was impressed. And as far as I'm concerned, that sticker was put on there for me.
Right. It was put on for you. And we're going to let you relish in that.
Relish, hot dog. I'm a little hungry. Actually, I have a Reuben that's right here. And you know when you leave food out for a while and then you just kind of give your room the smell of that food for hours?
Yeah.
I'm doing that currently with a Reuben.
I do that with my coffee. As a gift, I think for Christmas or something, I got one of those coffee warmers.
Oh, I've look, seen you with Reuben. That. Yeah, it's right here. It's a really good looking. I'm going to spill this sauce
Whoa.
All over my. Yeah. Look at all the meat on that, if you would. That's a lot of meat.
That's
a ton of meat.
That's as it should be, and now you're making me. I think I'm going to order Cantor's Deli for lunch. I'm going to go full-blown pastrami.
You should. You should. Yeah. I'm telling you, this Reuben from Slimans in Cleveland, Ohio, shout out Slimans, is delicious. So I encourage your pastrami interests. Well, we definitely wanted to talk about Reubens and pastrami today. We also had another topic selected for today. There was an interesting article that was published by a number of adult men with hemophilia around their concerns related to gene therapy studies and vigor, or in their estimation, maybe a lack thereof in some of the scientific work being done as it relates to gene therapy. But we're going to push that for another week. So we'll have that conversation next Friday, because today we're recording this on Wednesday, September 16th. And I woke up this morning to a text from a friend, Jeannie White Ginder, that said, Roy passed away at 12 a.m. tonight. Roy Ginder was Jeannie White Ginder's husband of 28 years. Listeners to Bloodstream should know, but for those who don't, Jeannie White Ginder is the mother of Ryan White. Ryan, when he was 14 years old, was diagnosed with, 13, was diagnosed with HIV and hepatitis C as a result of contaminated blood product. his fight to go back to school took on national and international attention and turned into a media circus unlike any other. But it also put his fight to go back to school on an extraordinary stage, and with it, the civil rights of people living with HIV and AIDS. Ryan became an unwitting face of the movement, and when he died in 1990, his funeral was the second most watched television event of that year, following only the Super Bowl. And a few months later, the largest federally funded bill to support people living with HIV and AIDS was passed in his name. The Ryan White Care Act passed 30 years ago just last month. For 28 years, Roy served as Jeannie's husband. I had the privilege of meeting Roy numerous times in the last 7 years as Believe Limited has worked closely with Jeannie on a number of projects. Had the privilege of interviewing him for a yet-to-be-released documentary about Ryan and Jeannie, during which I got to hear him speak like I've heard no one else speak about Jeannie White-Ginder, who she is, why he loves her, and the sides of her that he sees that no one else did. I'm grateful that those are forever captured. Funny enough, true to character, even while we were having that recorded conversation, Roy did not realize that cameras were rolling. Because of the size of the cameras, he thought that Rob and Josh were just taking some still shots. I don't know what he thought Dave was doing by putting a microphone on him. I don't know how he figured that into his reality, but it wasn't for a little while that he realized that he was being recorded. And I'm very grateful that he kept going to say some of the beautiful stuff that he said. But that changed my day, as I'm sure it changed some others. And of course, as I mentioned, I got that message from Jeannie this morning, and about 2 hours ago we had a 20-25 minute phone call, and she gave me some more of the details. You know, Roy had been ill for a while. He had an emergency quadruple bypass several months ago, and barely pulled out of that. In fact, I was on the phone with Jeannie during that period too, trying to muster as much spirit as we could for what was then rather grim circumstances. But Roy, true to his brand, fought back and continued to breathe oxygen here on Earth. He had more lives than most cats, something that Jeannie and I were able to laugh about when things were looking a little grim many months ago. And in fact, two nights ago, as Jeannie recounted, he was excitedly chatting with his nurse. They were talking about the fires in California and how much he loved California, telling stories about his time at the Neverland Ranch. I've heard him tell these stories, and Jeannie mentioned he was lighting up as he always does when he tells them. I know exactly what that looks like. And to think less than 24 hours later, he was gone. So Roy, to me, is a significant character for a number of reasons, but maybe most notably because he is the champion of the champion. He is the advocate for the advocate. He's the person next to the person. And in many ways, that role was Jeannie's in Ryan's life. And in many ways, I think Jeannie has continued to see herself in that role, even in Ryan's death, that she is still supporting his work. Roy was always there for Jeannie. Roy loved and supported and spoke about Jeannie in a way that would make most poets jealous. I think to be the person next to the person is a uniquely special role. I remember well when I was in school for acting, preparing for my thesis, I was going to do a bit from Lou Gehrig, who most people know passed away young from ALS and was in fact an active baseball player at the time of his diagnosis. I got very interested in him and thought, oh, his Luckiest Man speech, I'd love to do that as part of my performance thesis. And in my research into Lou Gehrig, I discovered his wife, Eleanor. And I read her book called My Luke and I believe it is, L-U-K-E. And in it, there was one passage that shattered me, because she never dated again. She never married, never had kids. And she said toward the end of the book, I wouldn't have given 6 minutes of my life with that man for 60 years with anyone else. We don't often hear about the Eleanor Gehrigs or the Roy Ginders they're next to such special people, it's almost impossible for there to be enough bandwidth for us to hear and appreciate both. But I guess it's my wish that today and in these days of mourning for Jeannie and her family and for Roy Ginder's greater family, that we do stop to remember Roy and to remember the champion of his servant wife and appreciate all that he did for a woman so many of us greatly, greatly and rightly admire. Thank you, Roy. Thank you for what you gave to Jeannie. Thank you for your willingness to share openly and vulnerably your story. Thank you for your good humor and unique perspective. Thank you for a contagious laugh. Thank you for always being welcoming. And thank you for defending Jeannie sometimes if it meant coming into conflict with me. I love you. I will miss you. And your story will forever be part of the Ryan and Jeannie White story. Amy, I don't know where we go from there, but that's what I really wanted to say today.
I think, thank you for that. As, you know, speaking from someone who doesn't know the Ginder family as intimately as you do, it was nice to get a kind of a window into who they are as people, not just as the, you know, advocates in front of a cause, but who they are as people and what drives that. And I think it's a celebration of the quiet resolve and some of the attributes in life that are not as celebrated widely or loudly, the patience and the behind the scenes compassion and, you know, some of those attributes that are not as loud. And so I think it's lovely today to celebrate him and to celebrate her and what he meant to not only her, but the cause and her work. And I find it really moving to hear your personal connection to it. So thank you.
You know, there's a sweet story that Jeannie tells about how she and Roy started dating. And I'll butcher part of it off the top of my head. But as I mentioned, Roy and Ryan connected first. Or maybe I didn't mention. You'll have to forgive me. My head's a little scrambled. And I was just talking to my mother-in-law about this too. But so Michael Jackson, Ryan White's story involves all these crazy celebrity names. It's bizarre and nuts, but that's part of the story. So Michael Jackson was one of Ryan's friends during this period and got him a 1989 red Ford Mustang. And Ryan was a huge car guy. You know, he grew up with hemophilia. And so for him, cars were like the exciting, exhilarating thing he was looking at. And he talked about in his book. So he gets this Mustang and he didn't know it was coming, though Michael had inquired when he learned that Ryan liked Mustangs. He asked some questions. It arrives, and I guess something about it wasn't perfect. I don't know what that means. So Ryan had asked Jeannie, like, could I tell Michael about... And she was like, no, you don't tell Michael anything is wrong with this car. You don't ask him to do a single other thing. So Ryan was like, okay. So he developed a relationship with the local body man, as Roy would call himself, Roy Ginder. And that's where their relationship started. In fact, Roy has talked about there were times where he and Ryan would race around the town, which I think is pretty adorable. And his kids, or one of his kids anyway, was a good friend of Andrea, Ryan's sister. It was after Ryan died that Jeannie had gotten an invitation to an AIDS event. And up to that point, you know, the invitations were always for Ryan and Jeannie or Ryan and guest, and she was always the plus one, so to speak. Mm. But this was to be the first time she was the invited guest with a plus one. And her daughter, Andrea, and I believe it was Steve, I could have that wrong, but one of Roy's kids, the two kids were chatting back and forth, And I guess Roy's daughter had inquired with Andrea about whether or not her mom was single. And then Andrea suggested to Jeannie, well, why don't you see if, you know, that nice Mr. Ginder would go with you, which he did. And then he started to be the person that you would forever see by Jeannie's side all these years when health would allow it. He was on dialysis for several of his final years, so his travel had been a bit restricted. But those who saw Jeannie on multiple occasions at AIDS or hemophilia events most likely saw Roy Ginder walking alongside her, sitting alongside her, just quietly being there for whatever she may need. They have a really adorable story, and Jeannie, so deserving of someone like that in her life for all that she has done and been through. He was the partner that she never had and could have so desperately used through all of those years battling with Ryan and Andrea, but that she gratefully had for the last 28 years. So, yeah, I think for those who do know Jeannie, have some connection to her, sending her a little bit of love would go a long way. Sue Lurch and the Hemophilia Foundation of Michigan are quite close with Jeannie. She might be someone to Sue Lurch to connect with if you don't have contact for Jeannie but would like to reach out. I'm sure Sue could help facilitate, and I've imagined she'll be pulling things together for Jeannie in the not too distant future. And yeah, say a prayer, say a thought for Roy today, and maybe think of who are the Roys and Eleanors in your life too, and let's remember to give them credit and share our love while they are still with us.
In all honesty, I love, I kind of cherish the stories of the Roys of the world, the Jessica Bombardiers of the world, that have a, their burden is waiting and patience and resolve. And it's, there's a great line in one of my favorite movies, Out of Africa, that Meryl Streep says, you know, that she's, the character just is aware that, she puts it in terms of gender, that men get to go off and explore and have adventures. And the woman's job, the great woman's, you know, job and place is to wait. And, you know, how hard that is, and how it's not celebrated. It's not celebrated. And so I just, you know, there's a piece of me that the people who were around Roy, in particular in this time with this documentary, were really drawn to him. Rob has really spoken about it. Josh has really spoken about it. And I find that really exciting to hear more of his story and have more of his words and his wisdom and just the place that he has served in this larger story. I think it's really important and lovely. And just from a personal standpoint, I know this must have an added weight of loss for Jeannie to have both Ryan and Roy go before her. And just, you know, just that added weight, knowing that she must feel today. So that's on my mind too.
Yeah, certainly. Mine as well. And at the same time, you know, part of our conversation earlier also included laughter, because life's dynamic and funky. So there was tears, there was laughter, and there'll probably be a mix of that for quite a while. But if you do know her, send her some love. And yeah, this Christmas I think will be tricky. You know, Christmas is kind of a 11-month a year holiday in Jeannie's house. Some decorations never leave. Actually, her and my sister-in-law really need to meet each other. But they, you know, Ryan's birthday is in early December. Christmas is obviously when Christmas falls, and I know that's a tough time of year for her to begin with. So be keeping her in our, let's keep her in our thoughts today throughout the fall, and maybe most especially as things get a little bit quiet and life starts to move on, so to speak. Let's remember during the holidays that she's going to need support then too.
What about you as an advocate? What have you personally taken, like, what have you taken from being so intimately involved in that relationship and seeing that dynamic in terms of a larger cause and a larger voice and a larger platform and something bigger than yourself and the humanity and all of that?
It's a great question. I think there's something larger than the self I come back to a lot. I think Ryan's life was his life, but his story and the impact it had and its importance societally, historically, culturally is so much bigger than even him. And he knew that. And he leaned into that and spoke about that. And he had to, he was very young to have to kind of come to grips with that idea, but he did. And I view the work that we've been doing with Jeannie for 7 years to be an extension of the work that he did and so many others have had a hand in through these last 3+ decades. And it's, you know, Larry Kramer, I think we talked about it maybe here on Bloodstream briefly, died a few months back. Very different story, but another titan of AIDS advocacy and an instrumental voice in the fight for justice. These are individuals, but I take solace in the cause. The mission is about so much more than individuals. So I personally mourn for the losses, but I'm spiritually driven to keep the work up and just get stronger. This is maybe a little bit of a tangent, but Paul Newman is an idol in my life. And I grew up going to his summer camps. Then I got into acting and it was just like, man, this guy just, he's my idol. And then he's my idol again. And I had the great chance to meet him on 3 different occasions within the last couple of years of his life and to talk about camp and to talk about disease and to talk about health and to talk about the role of entertainment. And I was in the theater that he met his wife, Joanne Woodward, in back in, I think, the 50s. They were doing a production in the Music Box Theater in Manhattan on 46th between 8th and 9th. And I was working there at the time. And Stell Parsons closed the show. It's August Osage County. It's like a 3-hour and 15-minute show. It's got 2 intermissions. It never ends. It's about such like ridiculous family stuff. It's a matinee performance. It comes to an end. She takes the bows and then she steps forward. And when she would step forward, it was always like there's a cast announcement. And as ushers, which is what I was at this time, we generally knew when those were coming and more or less what they would be about. So it was intriguing when she'd step forward after 3 hours and 15 minutes and we didn't know why. And she went on to share that she had just learned that Paul Newman had died and that it was in this very theater that he met his wife. I think it was during a production of Picnic where they were both understudies. And they went on to be, you know, one of the most covered and fabled Hollywood couples and true entertainment philanthropists. And, you know, I'm standing in the balcony of that theater. I remember it well, house left, all the way back near the doors, and a few hundred people are about to exit. I know they have no idea who I am and don't care, nor should they. And I just need to, like, do my job for a few minutes, and then I can kind of sit in this theater and think about this for 4 hours. Actually, no, this show is so long. It was probably only about 15 minutes before the evening show. But I had that between show time to sort of sit in that theater, relatively empty, and reflect and think about, what does this mean? What does this mean? It means I won't work with him. And that's a little sad. But more importantly, it means that a torch has dropped and someone or someone's responsibility to pick that torch up and to keep going. There's good work that people who leave us were doing, and we have to continue that work after they're done. That's the best way we can honor people that we have lost. So I think Ryan's story teaches me that the strength of the guys in this community, guys and women in this community who have experienced so, so, so much loss. You know, I mean, I've lost my brother. I've experienced mine, but there are some in this community whose losses to me are unimaginable. But to see those who find resolve in the work of advocacy, the work of policymaking, the work of health and social justice, the work of healthcare and medicine, the work of pharmacy and pharmacy management, all of these elements of taking care of ourselves and each other, that's how we pay honor. That's how we move forward. And it's not going to remove the personal pain from losing a loved one, but it will, at least in my experience, it will satisfy the part of me that wants to honor the dead and in some way keep them alive. And that, to me, the way to do that is through the work. So I think I learned that to some degree through the two of them. And I'd say maybe a little more specifically, Amy, you asked, or you mentioned earlier about patience and waiting that the support person is often responsible for. Roy did a beautiful job of allowing Ryan's story and Jeannie's story before the two of them met and married to have the space it needed in the relationship. Mm-hmm. Ryan is an extraordinary figure. To this day, Jeannie gets mail about him to the house. So there really is no way to separate Ryan White and his story and impact and influence from who Jeannie White Ginder is. And I think a less secure man would be threatened by that, would not be comfortable with Ryan's presence still having such a large place in Jeannie's mind, heart, and day-to-day life. But Roy not only accepted that, he was a part of it. He leaned into it. He shared in it with her the way you'd ideally hope a partner would.
And what a gift to her.
What
a gift to her. And to his memory, to have her partner, as you said, share in that. It's really special.
Hey, Bloodstream listeners, it's Patrick again. Please forgive any background you may hear. It's a couple hours after Amy and I finished recording and the house here in Ohio is coming alive as everybody's home from work. But I'm getting back on the mic because after Amy and I finished, I went looking for the footage of Roy that I was referencing from our interview for the TB released documentary on Ryan and Jeannie, and I found it and listened back to portions of it, and there's a section in particular that I wanted to share here. I don't know if we'll use it in the film or anywhere else for any other purpose, so it seemed like this might be an appropriate moment to share this story of Roy and Roy recounting his first dates with Jeannie and just sharing a little bit of how he felt about the woman he loved. So we'll go out on this, which means right now I will say thank you to our presenting sponsor, Takeda. Thank you to all of you listeners. Please do subscribe and share the Bloodstream podcast. You know the drill. And I hope you enjoy this little bit of a window into Roy Ginder and his relationship to Jeannie.
Remember the first time that you saw Jeannie after Ryan had passed away, after all of that had kind of settled? Do you remember the first time you saw her after that?
Probably when we had our date, because I moved from that neighborhood shortly after Ryan died. But she sent me a Christmas card. She knew where I was living because I'd called. They had something they had something planned, and I was going to go to it, but it fell through. It was discontinued. And so, but I gave her my phone number and address. So she sent me a Christmas card that year in 91. And she said that, I got the Christmas card and couldn't believe that I got a card from her, you know, that she'd remember me, you know, just a neighbor. And she gave me a call. No, let me back up. I'm getting ahead of the horse. I asked my daughter, I said, "Sean, do you know if Mrs. White's married?" And she says, I don't know. I can ask Andrea." I said, "Ask her. And if she's not married, ask her if she wants to go out and see a movie or something." And so Andrea or Sean went to school and talked to Andrea, and then Andrea talked to Jeannie, and after that, it took a couple of weeks for the messages to get back and forth and back to me, but she said, yeah, she'd go out with me. I thought, well, that's all right. So she called me one evening, said, I've got a cocktail party to go to. Would you be interested in going? I said, sure, not a problem. So I didn't have any good clothes. So a buddy of mine and I, he took me to Walmart and was showing me the clothes I needed to buy. Of course, I ended up with a turtleneck sweater and jeans. But anyway, I didn't like the turtleneck. But we went out on that date to that cocktail party. And then after that, she treated me really, really warm. Like she was a really caring person. And of course she was talking to everybody and everybody wanted to talk to her. And then when we left, she also had her secretary and her husband go with us to this. Because she wouldn't go by herself with me. Because she knew how guys were. And so Tom and Shelley went with us, and afterwards we stopped and had dinner at the Waffle House in Noblesville. And so she bought my dinner. I thought, a woman has never bought me a meal before in my life. So I could get used to this. But I went back to her house, and I had my truck there. And I said, would you like to see a movie in a week or so? And she goes, yeah. Okay, so I called her, and so that weekend, we went and seen Fried Green Tomatoes. Do you remember that movie? And then the next weekend, we went and seen another movie. And then seems like we were together every weekend after that. I really got fond of her. And she, you know, she treated me like a human being. And never was used to that before. And well, I shouldn't talk like that, I guess. But she was really nice to me. So we started getting serious. And I went on a couple trips with her. And it was really working out really good. And so back then, the circle in Indianapolis, Monument Circle, had horses with pulling carriages. And of an evening, you could rent one of those and just take a ride around Indianapolis. So we did that, and while we were on the carriage, I asked her to marry me. And I was really afraid the answer wasn't going to be yes. But I might be fooling you, but or trying to fool you, but I thought that much of her, and still do. And she's quite the lady. She cares about everything. She cares about everybody. Now, when I go to speeches with her, like we're going to Indianapolis, she'll be the last one to leave. She will stop after the speech and take any question and answer, and even people will actually come up to her and want to hug her and get pictures and all that. She's real caring, and she likes to help a lot of the people that can't help themselves.